Just in time for the start of another school year, August is Immunization Awareness Month. Do you believe in vaccinating your children or not? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, August 17th. We will talk with a guest pediatrician who is also an immunization expert who will share updated information and will answer your immunization questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Rajeev Naik, a pediatrician with Gunderson Health System. Good morning.
Good morning.
So our conversation in part was prompted by a news release from State Senator Julie Lassa. And in essence, she was saying, hey, parents, along with all your other back-to-school preparations, make sure your children's immunizations are up to snuff. I assume that you would agree with that advice.
I would agree with the advice. It is a great time of year to make sure that before kids head off to school that all their healthcare is up to date, including their immunizations.
Yeah. So, what what are the general guidelines or rules of thumb when it comes to kids and their immunizations? Are they? I mean, every year is there a new one?
No, not every year, but there is a schedule that is recommended actually across the country, and there are a number of different diseases which we prevent with vaccines, starting as infants and continuing into childhood. And then there are some teen vaccines as well.
Yeah. So what diseases are preventable with a vaccine?
There are a number of vaccine-preventable diseases, starting with some of the ones that we immunize for at a young age, including whooping cough, tetanus, diphtheria, measles, mumps, rubella, some that may not be recognizable to parents but used to cause all kinds of problems like polio, Haemophilus influenzae, pneumococcal disease, and more.
Yeah. And what about college-age children?
As they head into adolescence, there are a number of other vaccines that we do, including meningitis vaccines. We immunize against a virus called human papillomavirus, or HPV, and we boost some of the ones that were given earlier, including the pertussis vaccine.
Oh, there's an update or a booster for that then.
Correct.
What about adults? I haven't been vaccinated in a very long time. Am I supposed to get something?
Absolutely. There are adult vaccines as well that are important. And again, the tetanus, diphtheria, whooping cough booster dose is an important one to get as an adult. And there are other vaccines, including flu vaccine. And there's one against shingles now for older adults.
Oh, of course, yes. I happen to get those. The tetanus one is every 10 years, and I learned that from getting a cat bite. I had to get a tetanus shot.
That's correct. It's every 10 years, sometimes sooner if you have an exposure.
Yeah. So we also were alerted to you and your expertise in an article about the vaccination rate in Wisconsin. What is the current vaccination rate in Wisconsin?
Depending on which vaccines you're measuring, the vaccine rates in Wisconsin for complete vaccination status upon entry into kindergarten is around 72%.
That's not great.
No, it's around the national average, but we wish we could do better.
Yeah. So why isn't it 100%?
There are a number of reasons why it might not ever be 100%, but what we would like to do is strive towards the highest rates we could get. Some of the reasons are there are a very few people that may have some actual medical contraindications to receiving a vaccine. But in a lot of circumstances, it happens to be that people just aren't getting their children in to get them up to date, even if they don't have any philosophical or personal beliefs against vaccines. Also, there are some people that continue to have issues or personal beliefs that or personal beliefs that they do not want to use the vaccines.
Yeah, is the Medical Society of Wisconsin recently came out with a position that is against that personal exemption, saying that in Wisconsin, parents should not be able to claim, I believe it was, religious or personal reasons for not getting their kids vaccinated. Can you talk about that particular position from the Medical Society?
Sure. First of all, every state has different legislation regarding school requirements for vaccines. And there are states that have more rigorous exemption laws. In other words, some states provide only medical exemptions. There are other states that are more liberal with the laws that allow personal or philosophical exemptions for vaccines. Wisconsin happens to be one of those states. And when there's personal or philosophical exemptions, they don't require a doctor to sign off on the vaccine entry for school. So in other words, if you're a parent and you choose not to do the vaccines, you can just sign a piece of paper saying that you choose not to do it. And the reason that this becomes important is it's not only the people that truly don't want to do vaccines that'll sign those forms. Sometimes they'll show up at school registrations, which people are doing right now as kids are getting ready to go to school. And it's sometimes easier for them to sign the piece of paper than schedule an appointment, get in to their doctor or to the public health department and get the vaccines done. So there's a number of new studies that suggest that strengthening the exemption laws can really be a good tool to make sure that children are vaccinated, including those that don't have families who have personal or philosophical beliefs that would dictate that, but just those that choose to sign the piece of paper rather than trying to make the extra time to get those children in.
So why is it so important that all or nearly all children be vaccinated?
Yeah, well, the most important thing is that the vaccines that we have as routine scheduled health care maintenance have saved millions and millions of lives over time, not to mention all of the hospitalizations and all of the complications of these previously very serious and devastating diseases. Furthermore, we've had many lessons over time about how if we start to have pockets in which the vaccine rates dip, that these diseases can come back. So some of these diseases you can think of as historical, such as polio and diphtheria and tetanus and things like that, that if we get too lax in our commitment to making sure that children receive these vaccines, the diseases can come back, measles being a perfect example of that.
Yeah, well, let's talk about there was a measles outbreak in the Midwest. What was that? Just last spring, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's been this year, 2015. In fact, in 2015, we've had more measles cases through this part of the year than in any of the last several years.
Yeah, so how unusual was that outbreak?
Well, it is definitely a warning sign for us that we need to make sure that we're doing what we can to ensure children receive the MMR vaccine. Unfortunately, it's becoming less unusual over the last decade. The measles, mumps, rubella vaccine has been a target for those choosing not to vaccinate. And as a result, we've had a number of measles outbreaks throughout the country over the last decade.
Yeah. In fact, we'll talk about why vaccines are so controversial after we check news. I don't think we have enough time before news to get into this. Rachel on Facebook says, vaccinations just as controversial as politics and religion. And we'll talk about maybe why that is. And we'll welcome your questions about vaccinations, wondering if you or your children are up to date with your vaccinations. Do you believe in vaccinating your children or not? What questions do you have for our guest pediatrician? Do you think that vaccinations, especially for children, should be mandatory unless there is a medical reason not to do this, to remove the personal exemption that Wisconsin has? Is that a good idea or not? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. August is Immunization Awareness Month, and we are talking with a guest expert about the importance of vaccinations, the importance in preventing illness and saving lives, and we are welcoming your questions and your experiences. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Rajiv Naik, a pediatrician with Gunderson Health System. And our first caller is Tom in Port Wing. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Joy.
Morning.
I have a question for the doctor. If a child born in 1975 would receive how many total vaccines as opposed to a child born in 2015?
Yeah, so there's actually quite a few more vaccines that we give these days. So in 1972, there were approximately, I think, four or five diseases that we immunized against in the first 5 years of life. And now we're up to double digits.
How many double digits?
It depends on your vaccine schedule, but we immunize against, around 15.
Yes, so Tom, what's the significance of this?
Well, I know there's a whole bunch of new vaccines coming on, and also for adults, and I'm wondering what the total, I guess, would be if you went into adulthood. It seems like there's, you know, from myself to my grandkids, there's a whole lot more vaccines. That's pretty obvious, but I really wanted to know what the grand total would be.
Yeah, all right. It's a good question, but does it concern you that we are getting so many more vaccines today than we were back in the day?
Oh, it definitely concerns me. I've been vaccinated for most things myself and try and keep current. I know there's adult vaccines, but there's also just the sheer number. And also my concern, too, is that all of these companies are released from liability should there be a complication from the vaccines. Is that not correct?
So let's talk about both of those things, because I think they're important points and things that we hear a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
The first concern is about, are we giving too many vaccines? And it's a really interesting thing. People focus in on the number of shots. And fortunately, science advances over time, and we can prevent more and more diseases that used to harm many people, including, of course, children. But what's really interesting, if you really look at it, the immune system recognizes what we call antigens, foreign bodies to the immune system. And back in 1960, when we were only immunizing against polio, smallpox, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, so five different diseases back then, we were actually giving over 3,000 antigens, which sounds like a lot, but to the immune system is still a small number. But in all of the vaccines that we give in the first 5 years of life now, because the vaccine technology has changed, we're only giving around 150 antigens. So people tout this immune overload concern or theory, but in reality, we're giving about 25 times less antigens to the immune system today than we did way back in 1960. So this is one of the common myths that we hear about concerns about vaccines, And when you really know the vaccine science, it doesn't hold any water. We're actually giving less antigens today than we did way back in 1960.
Interesting. Well, speaking of the myths of about vaccines, the biggie is that vaccines can cause more harm than good, including autism.
Sure. You know, that concern was brought up in 1998 out of a paper by an English physician known as Dr. Andrew Wakefield, or the Wakefield paper, which was published in a very reputable journal called The Lancet, which is an English medical journal. And in that study, he reported a series of children who he claimed were diagnosed with autism within close receipt of the timing of the MMR vaccine. Well, it took several years for the fraud to come out, but an investigative reporter by the name of Brian Deere was able to get to the bottom of things. And as it turned out, Dr. Wakefield took hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to prove this theory about the timing of MMR vaccine and autism. And it turns out there was falsified data, bad data, unethical practices. And to make a long story short, the article was retracted. All of his co-authors said, "We didn't know this." They retracted. But it received worldwide publicity, especially since Dr. Wakefield had some definite charisma and went around touting his theory, even theories that weren't even proposed in the paper. And it's caused some worldwide problems with receipt of MMR vaccine because of it. And to this day, he is going around, and he actually lives in the United States now and has become an anti-vaccine proponent and, the face and leader of that movement.
But still, many parents still believe that vaccines cause autism, even after all that research was discredited. I know someone who wanted to talk on the program about his daughter. He saw the change after vaccination, so that was proof enough for him.
Correct, yeah.
So what about that?
So the myths still persist despite now hundreds and hundreds of studies disproving the relationship between vaccines and autism, and despite the discovery of this fraudulent paper, which started it all. And what's very challenging for a lot of parents, especially those whom have children with autism, is that autism is a frustrating disorder to take care of. We need a lot more research on autism. We need to understand it better, and we need to understand the treatment that helps as well as the causes. And so not enough is known about autism. But one of the things that we do know, that there are forms of autism that the children show some relatively typical development and then have a pattern of developmental regression, typically between 1 and 2 years of age. Well, as you look at the vaccine schedule, we give many, many vaccines over the first few years of age, and autism is almost always diagnosed between 1 and 4 years of age when we're giving the bulk of childhood immunizations. So they're always going to be related in time, but that does not equal cause and effect. And what we look at with the scientific studies is to try to look at cause and effect. And just because things are related in time does not mean that one caused the other. So in this case, time is what we call a confounding variable. They're related, but it's not cause and effect.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Dr. Rajeev Naik, a pediatrician with Gunderson Health System in La Crosse, talking with us about immunizations, vaccinations, sharing some updated information, answering your questions. responding to your views. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So do you worry about children who are not getting vaccinated against certain diseases like the measles or whooping cough? Do you, on the other hand, worry that the vaccine is somehow worse than the disease? Let us know your thoughts. We have Candace on Facebook who says, I'm old enough to have had a smallpox vaccination. I remember the polio epidemic in the 1950s where we were not allowed to go out into our yards. I know people who were affected by polio. There is no reason for anyone to have these horrible illnesses if we can vaccinate against them. You agree, Dr. Naik?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is really important, is that some of these diseases, a lot of people aren't old enough to remember, but if you are able to talk to people that are old enough to remember how devastating these diseases are, it's very, very valuable lesson.
Yeah, let me ask, though, I know some people think that that the diseases are not a big deal. Now, maybe polio was a big deal, but they're thinking, hey, I had measles when I was a kid, and I lived. So did my neighbor. Why was this measles epidemic that did break out in the Midwest, but not in Wisconsin? I think we might have had a case or two. Why was this so frightening? I mean, do measles kill us?
Yeah, they do. One to three in 1,000 children died from measles historically. So it has a significant rate of mortality, and many, many others had significant complications. And it is true that, many years ago, you didn't have an option, and people had to deal with these diseases. And if they were fortunate enough to do well, then they said, well, I had it, it wasn't so bad. But I often use the analogy of riding around in your car. You know, hopefully most people are wearing their seatbelts. You may not get in an accident, but if you do, you're pretty fortunate if you're wearing your seatbelt, because your likelihood of being more seriously injured or dying is significantly less. So this is a safety measure, something that helps keep children healthy in case they do run into these diseases.
Yeah, we do, however, in Wisconsin, we have seen widespread outbreaks of whooping cough. This what does this do to?
Yeah, so there are a number of reasons that whooping cough has made somewhat of a comeback. The first reason is that the immunity from the vaccine does wear off over time, which is why over the last several years we've added in booster doses for older children and adults. The second issue is that we used to use a different whooping cough vaccine that was perhaps a little bit more effective, but also had more side effects. So in an attempt to make sure we had less side effects with this vaccine, we've gone towards something called an acellular vaccine rather than what was the initial whole cell vaccine. The whole cell vaccine, they just killed the bacteria and basically put it into a vaccine, and it was a little bit messier, I would say, and definitely caused more side effects. So now they just use a more purified version with just 3 to 5 antigens in the vaccine, and it is a lot less likely to cause side effects, but it may not be quite as effective.
We'll take more calls in just a moment, but I also wanted to talk briefly about the flu vaccine. And I know a lot of adults who don't want to have the flu vaccine because they think it gives them the flu.
Yeah, that's one of the myths that persists, is that the flu vaccine causes the flu. Flu vaccine can have some relatively minor side effects in some individuals, but the vaccine is a killed vaccine. It is not capable of causing actual influenza. For some people, there is a live vaccine that is given nasally, so in the nose, and that also is weakened to the degree that it really is not going to cause true disease. But neither the flu shot nor the nasal vaccine is going to cause significant flu symptoms.
Do the vaccine makers still use that mercury compound to preserve vaccines?
So the only vaccine that contains small amounts of thimerosal, or the quotes mercury-containing preservative, is some of the flu vaccine. And the reason that this preservative was around to start, and it's not in any other vaccine, is that preservatives were used to help prevent the vaccines from becoming contaminated. So they were prevented bacterial contamination. The reason that the flu vaccine still has some preservative in it, most other vaccines now come in single-dose vials where they don't need the same type of anti-infective or preservative in them. But flu vaccine has to be manufactured year after year. So, in other words, it has to be made within a year based on the strains that circulated the previous year. So you have to make hundreds of millions of doses and ship them out to locations all throughout the country. And so they're not. It would be impossible to package all that in single dose vials and get that those hundreds of millions of doses shipped out within a year.
Let's take a call before our news break. Maddie in Wapaka. Hi, Maddie.
Hello. My 13-year-old grandson was severely brain damaged from a flu vaccine that he received when he was around 4 and a half. Only recently, maybe last year, I received a vaccination from a doctor who gives flu vaccine without the mercury, but I received a statement that says vaccine information statement. On that statement, it says the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. That is the first time that I ever heard that there was a National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, and it's my understanding that has been going since the 1980s.
Yeah, because we almost have news, Dr. Nike, that is there such a thing?
Yeah, there is something called the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which was designed to make sure that people that are truly harmed by vaccines are compensated. We can talk more about that.
Yeah, we do have. So, a flu shot, Maddie says, caused brain damage in her grandson. Has that ever been documented?
Yeah, you know, there really has not been documentation of that actually occurring. And again, you know, what people may believe to be true with timing and what can be proven or shown to be true scientifically are not always the same, and obviously we don't know the specifics of the claim here.
Right.
So I can't speak specifically to that concern, but the vaccine compensation program has data and tracks true injuries from vaccines, and the most severe thing would be like a severe allergic reaction, which is exceedingly rare. And the way I like to state it, over the last, you know, decade or so, the amount of times that has happened is something like 25 times less likely than one being struck by lightning. You know, it's an extremely rare event.
Thank you, Maddie, for the call. We are talking about back-to-school vaccinations. Wondering if you think this should be a parental option or is it a public health necessity? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You're You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's almost time for the kids to head back to school, and we are talking about getting our children vaccinated before they go to school. And we wonder if you agree. Do you believe in vaccinating your children? Do you worry about children who are not getting vaccinated against certain illnesses because their parents have some concern about this? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with a Wisconsin pediatrician about the importance of immunizing our children, and we're welcoming your questions and views. We are also talking about the vaccination debate and wondering if the personal exemption that exists in Wisconsin law, which allows parents to forego getting their kids vaccinated for religious or personal reasons, should that be thrown out? Should vaccinations for kids be mandatory unless there is a medical reason not to do so? And our guest is Dr. Rajeev Naik, a pediatrician with Gunderson Health System. What medical reasons might there be, Dr. Naik, to not get your children vaccinated?
Sure. The most likely exemptions from a medical standpoint would be if the child has a suppressed immune system. For example, they may not be able to receive a live vaccine. So, chickenpox, MMR, the nasal flu vaccine, rotavirus, they are live vaccines. If your immune system is suppressed, for example, if a child is undergoing cancer treatment like chemotherapy, they may not be able to receive the vaccine, at least at that time. So that would be a possible medical exemption. The other one would be an allergic reaction to a vaccine or vaccine component, which occasionally happens.
Yeah. And we were talking just before news time with Maddie from Wapaka, who said that a vaccine harmed her grandson and was surprised to hear that there was this vaccine injury compensation system going on. Talk some about that. There's actually something called a vaccine injury court?
Yeah, so the program was put in the 80s to help protect the vaccine program and to protect people who may have actually been injured by a vaccine, which is exceedingly rare. The basics are that they want to ensure that children overall receive their vaccine, so they want to protect the medical system from liability such that it didn't scare off, you know, healthcare providers and others from making sure that children receive their vaccines. And so it's basically a safety net to make sure that both people that are truly harmed from a vaccine are compensated, but also that there's protection from liability such that people aren't afraid to give vaccines. And the bottom line is that over a decade of experience in the vaccine courts, so from 2000 to 2010, there were 931 awards given, so about 93 per year on average. And you need to compare that to the vaccine preventable deaths, which averaged about 150,000 per year. So you're saving tons of lives with a very unlikely chance of ever being injured. And like I said, your likelihood of being struck by lightning is very low, but there's about 100 lightning strike deaths in this country every year, and there's only about 90, you know, vaccine injuries that were awarded per year.
And I'm. Let's take another call. Nathan in Milwaukee has been waiting. Hello, Nathan.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm an adult who is interested in dating in the future and was refused to an HPV vaccine wallet in hand by my doctor because I was simply older than the age of 26. I have had a very low number of former sexual partners, and I know other people in a similar situation, and I'm not sure any of us could get into one of these vaccines simply because we're older than age 26. I would also like to add the point that I was in a graveyard with an older person who pointed out to me the children's section of graves related to polio deaths and said quite simply that the reason we don't have new sections like this is because of the vaccines. So I do think they have a value.
Yeah, thank you, Nathan. How come an adult over the age of 26 can't get an HPV vaccine, Dr. Hike?
Yes. So the reason is that the HPV virus is very, very common. So the best utility of the vaccine is to give it early. It's only a preventative vaccine once you are infected with HPV, at least with those strains. It is not going to protect you, and the statistics are that the older you are, especially by your later adult years, most people have already been infected, so the cost effectiveness is going to go down dramatically. So the studies only went up to age 26 because by the age of 26, so many people have already been infected. And the statistics are by the age of 50 that 70% of all people have already been infected with HPV.
Paul emails, is it really necessary to have so many vaccines when they are so little? Also, couldn't the child's immune system, could it be the child's immune system can't tolerate all of those vaccines?
So this is going back to this vaccine overload concern, and the fact of the matter is that the immune system can actually respond to all kinds of antigens. In fact, as we said, the amount of antigens we're giving in all these vaccines that we give today is 25 times fewer than in 1960. So we're actually not giving much in the way of antigens to the immune system. We're just preventing a lot of diseases. And if you look at the immune system overall, all of this is a drop in the bucket. We're exposed to all kinds of foreign bodies or antigens to our immune system on an everyday basis. And they've actually looked at this in a theoretical way, and you could respond to 10,000 plus simultaneous vaccines, not that anybody's advocating that, and it still would not be overwhelming for the immune system.
We had a caller who wanted to ask about herd immunity and what percentage of a community's members need to be vaccinated to make the most out of a vaccine's benefits. First, what is herd immunity?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And herd immunity is the immunity for each individual you get from the vaccine. If enough people are immunized in a community, the vaccine rates are going to drop. And herd immunity refers to the process by which even those that are not vaccinated or protected benefit from the immunity collectively of the community. So in other words, if you have enough people immunized and immune, then the disease rates will be very low, and therefore even those that are not immunized will benefit. And the second part of her question was an excellent one, which is how low do the rates have to get before we no longer benefit from herd immunity? And historically, we've had several examples of that, and it depends on the disease and the prevalence of the disease, but we can roughly estimate it as less than 70%. So if you have less than 70% vaccine rates for a given disease in a community, the herd immunity phenomenon may not go into effect.
Well, you had mentioned earlier in the program that we have a 72% vaccination rate in Wisconsin. I'm trying to figure out if those 25%, whether they're for medical reasons or for personal reasons that they're not getting their children vaccinated or getting themselves vaccinated, what I'm trying to figure out how big of a risk that is to the rest of the community if 25% of our people are not getting their shots.
Right. So the 72% is for all immunizations across the board being completed on time for our children. So that seems low, but that might be one dose that's missing, so they might have all of their other vaccines. So when you look at that 72%, that's for getting all vaccines. But that being said, there are certainly some of the specific vaccines that the rates may be lower, and that's definitely can be a concern. And the measles example has once again should be a good reminder to us that it is necessary to keep the vaccine rates up, because there are definitely communities in which the levels of MMR vaccine rates may dip below 70%. And most of the epidemics of measles have been imported to this country from other countries. In other words, there are many countries throughout the rest of the world where the vaccine rates are significantly lower than ours. And with travel being much easier, obviously, these days, and visitors now from other countries all across the United States, it's very easy for some of these diseases to spread, especially highly contagious ones such as measles. And the California outbreak related to Disneyland was a perfect storm of lots of people, lots of travelers, unimmunized travelers with measles, and it was a perfect storm for an epidemic to occur.
We have just 30 seconds to go. Any advice or resources you could recommend for parents who'd like additional credible information about vaccination?
Yes, there's a number of excellent resources. The Center for Disease Control has excellent questions and answers. The American Academy of Pediatrics website also has excellent answers. And one of my personal favorites is the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia has a vaccine education center, which really puts all of these complicated issues into simple terms.
Well, you did too. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Dr. Rajeev Naik, a pediatrician with Gunderson Health System. Thanks to Marika Suval, Elizabeth Eliquis, and Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. This is the Ideas Network.